Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
When is an economic statistic not just an economic statistic? How about a dreadfully bad jobs report 5 months before a presidential election? That do it for you? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday, the 1st of June. Good to have you here. And I do wish there was a more cheerful place to start today. Unfortunately, the economy didn't really oblige. 69,000 net new jobs last month, 8.2% on the unemployment rate for May, as you've surely heard by now. Downward adjustments to the jobs totals for March and April. Grim is about the only way to slice that if you're a disinterested observer. It's nothing short of brutal if you're out there looking for work. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman spent the day at a job center in his hometown of Portland, Oregon.
The job center was packed this morning, just after opening. People checking help wanted listings, signing up for training, dealing with their paperwork. Not a single one knew about today's job numbers. 29-year-old Bryony Nesbitt said she doesn't need the official reports. She's got a front row seat every day.
I think it's flat rotten.
Which isn't to say Nesbitt is finding no work. It's just all really low wage.
Cleaning jobs, there's a dishwasher position for 2 days a week that I recently looked into.
Nesbitt lost her job as a health aide a year ago. She has most of a bachelor's degree.
And I've had years and years of work experience. It's just everybody requires a degree now. What happened to when we could work our way up through a company?
Kathy Earle's a single mom with one kid still at home. She managed a medical office until she got laid off. She doesn't sense any real change in the availability of jobs.
I don't think it's improving at all. It feels overwhelming, depressing to me.
Not everyone I met at the unemployment office was so pessimistic. Joe Cowan has been looking for work for the last year and a half. He has a small event planning business, but it's not paying the bills.
I think things are absolutely getting better. People are happier. People are talking more up about things.
Then Cowan got all macroeconomic on me.
With this last crisis, I think there's a whole slew of jobs that are just gone. We will never see them again. And part of that has impacted the high unemployment rate. And I don't think the unemployment rate is going to go back down below where people think it's supposed to.
I think he could get my job as a Marketplace reporter. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
I don't know, Mitchell. But it does seem to me what we need here is a little context, some insightful analysis. So we've rounded up Felix Salmon from Reuters and John Carney from CNBC for our weekly wrap of Wall Street and Beyond. Hey, guys.
Hi, Kai.
Hi.
All right, so Carney, riddle me this. This is the third spring and or summer in a row that we have backslid economically. I don't want to use the R word or double dip or any of that stuff, but what the heck?
This is really bad. I think this is pretty much the worst imaginable jobs report you could get at this point. The projections were way off. The actual number was way below even the lowest number coming out of the official economists who are always asked, you know, to project where the number would be. Even on Twitter, which was enormously bearish this morning, the consensus number was above where we came in.
Felix, Carney sounds like somebody shot his dog. Do you agree?
I do. I mean, I know that it's fun to be contrarian and come up with silver linings, and I can do that. If you look at the household report, the bit which comes up with the unemployment figures, there was actually a little bit of good news in there about a large increase in the number of people looking for jobs, an increase in the labor force, and actually an increase in employment of about 440,000 rather than the official number of just 69,000. But frankly, this was a really, really bad report. Employers are not adding jobs, and the government really has to act. But unfortunately, in election year, they're not going to.
All right, well, hold that thought, because we'll get to that in a minute. But John, let me ask you this. How much of this is Europe-induced, and how much of it is our own domestic weakness?
I think it's a little of both. Some of it is Europe-induced. If you're an employer, you're going to be anxious about your ability to export anywhere around the world. That's going to make you slow your hiring. But there's also been weak demand in the U.S. I think that we probably pushed forward a lot of hiring that usually occurs in the month of May because the weather was so good throughout much of the country in early spring and late winter. So I think we sort of stole from the future back then, made the economy look a little better than it actually was, and now we're feeling that effect right now.
Felix, the president was in Minnesota today, gave a speech in which he tried to put a good face on, didn't actually talk about the numbers at all. But if you're in the White House today, you have to be going, man, this is really, really grim.
And there's no obvious place where any kind of rescue is going to come from. Yesterday, we had a bunch of GDP figures from India, which is the lowest rate of growth that it's had in decades.
Right.
China's slowing down. No one is going to be able to rescue us. No one is showing growth. No one is showing demand. It looks like a real global slump we're in right now.
All right. So, John, to Felix's point earlier about the government has to do something, there's all this talk about the Federal Reserve and quantitative easing 3. I mean, is it going to come from the Fed or Congress? What's going to happen, if anything?
We're not going to see anything out of Congress, like Felix said. It's an election year.
Yeah, I don't know why I said that. Never mind.
But from the Fed, it's actually a little complex. They can't, you know, interest rates are already very low. Even the long-term interest rates are now so low that doing the old twist move where they try to push down the long-term rates doesn't really work at this level. They're going to have to do something really unconventional. I'm hearing from a lot of people on Wall Street, they think they'll go in and buy mortgage-backed securities, buy other types of private bonds, not government securities, because the government securities are at zero. What are you going to do at this point?
Yeah, Felix, let me ask you, just as long as we're on interest rates, this whole thing about the yield on the 10-year going to like 1.4-something% today and yesterday, why does that matter, if at all?
Well, it bespeaks an enormous amount of pessimism and basically says that there's huge amounts of really fearful cash out there. It's not just U.S. rates. The 10-year bonds in
Take your pick.
Germany, UK, Japan, Switzerland, you name it. They're all well below 1.5%. So what that means is that no one wants to take risks with their money. Everyone just wants to put it as safe as they can. The 2-year bond in Germany, this is my favorite one, is actually trading a negative yield right now. People are petrified. And so what we need to do is have those governments take that free money that the market is offering them and actually spend it and invest it.
Yeah, John, very quickly, prognosticate for me about the markets on Monday. Much like today, or are people going to take a breather?
I don't think people are going to take a breather. I actually think what's going to happen is people are going to open up the newspapers over the weekend, call their brokers and say, dude, save me.
John Carney from CNBC, Felix Salmon from Reuters. Thanks very much, you guys. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you.
You
all
too.
Right, we'll see you. One last thing about jobs before we move on. About our story yesterday on long-term unemployment and how people get by. Milford Pruitt out of Brooklyn, New York, heard that story. He had this to say.
Once again, I had to chuckle to myself as I have been unemployed since November 2008, and I'm now looking at 3.5 years of unemployment. In my late 50s, I have nearly exhausted my retirement savings and had to sell a home I love to generate a cushion from which the tax man took a big bite in capital gains. I wish someone would really look at the really, really long-term unemployed, especially those of us who are hitting 60 and for whom a job interview is as rare as a lottery hit.
In the lottery that is the stock market, as of the close on the Dow today, 2012 might as well never have happened. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Jobs number notwithstanding, it was good times today in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Walmart wrapped up its annual shareholders meeting. And one might have thought with the company facing bribery and corruption investigations into its businesses in Mexico, the mood might have been somewhat subdued. But as it happens, this year's meeting is also the 50th anniversary party for the world's biggest retailer. And Marketplace's Eve Tro reports controversy has yet to dampen the celebrations.
Any protesters against Walmart probably got drowned out by this. Last night, Aerosmith rocked a stadium of Walmart shareholders and employees from all over the world. This morning, Walmart CEO reassured stockholders the company stands for integrity, punctuated by Celine Dion.
Here
No one said, our profits will go on. But the stars are not there to show company strength. Just to add sparkle, says Steve Einzig with BookingEntertainment.com.
By the very nature of a shareholders meeting, it doesn't sound that exciting. But you put a big concert in with it, and it becomes an event.
A week-long bonanza, actually.
It's huge. My best friend's daughter was in line at 4:30 this morning to get in.
Tammy Still lives near Bentonville. She says to locals, it's called simply shareholders.
Shoot, I remember when Britney Spears was new and she performed, her and Brandy performed together at shareholders one night.
But no concerts for Tammy today. She's busy renting out canoes and unlocking cabins.
I'm at Camp Tilden on Big Sugar Creek.
That's where Walmart's founder, Sam Walton, reportedly held company meetings decades ago, staff float trips and campouts. No titans of industry at Big Sugar Creek today, just a few families.
They fish and they catch crawdads and play volleyball.
Far from the frenzy of today's Walmart shareholders. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
Just as some parts of this country were hit worse by the recession and the financial crisis than others, so too with Europe. In fact, a question you might ask is,
what's up?
What's up?
What's up, Europe?
What's up, Europe? Today to France, where compared to Spain or Ireland or Greece, life seems to be pretty good. Sophie Petter is the Paris bureau chief for The Economist magazine. Sophie, thanks for being here.
Very welcome.
So what's not in the papers today? What might an American audience appreciate about the news in Paris right now?
Well, I mean, what's not quite happened yet, but is very much on everyone's minds this evening, is a meeting between the new president, François Hollande, and Vladimir Putin, who is coming from Berlin, where he met Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, earlier. And I think, you know, the French are looking with great interest at their new president. He has had quite a baptism of fire over the last 2 weeks. This is somebody who has very, very little foreign policy experience. Now he's dealing with Putin, and that, as you know, is quite something. At the best of times, but for a debutante, it's going to be quite a challenge.
The debutante, that's a little harsh, no?
Well, I don't think it is in a way, because this is somebody who, don't forget, has not been ever in a member of any government in France. He's never been a minister. He is an experienced political hack, if you like, but he hasn't had any foreign policy experience at all except what he's done over the last 2.5 weeks.
Take me out of Paris for a minute and take us down to Marseille in the south of France or Brittany on the coast or wherever, and tell me what is on real people's minds, you know, away from the politics and all that.
What's on everyone's mind in France is the French Open. And this is the tennis tournament. It's a Grand Slam tournament. It takes place in Paris, but it's broadcast, obviously, nationally and live. And this year has been a very good year so far for the French male players. But today, I think there's a huge sense of disappointment because their last female player, a woman called Mathilde Johansson, has just gone out to an American, 19-year-old Sloane Stephens. That happened today. So disappointment on the female tennis front, but there's more than a handful of male players left. And that, for the French, is a big source of pride.
It sounds a little bit like life goes on over there, no matter what's happening.
Well, you know, I have to say, sometimes you do not get the sense of the euro crisis, which is real and is out there, and it does touch things like unemployment. But, you know, the French still like their holidays, and they like their days off, and if they can get in the car and head to the coast, they'll still do it.
Sophie Petter, she's the correspondent for The Economist in Paris. Sophie, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Coming up, the president's going to be in Los Angeles next week, South Los Angeles.
I'm going to be very disappointed if he cancels and I get all dressed up and get my hair done and tell all my friends to come.
I would be too, but first, let's do the numbers. And boom, every penny that the Dow Industrials had gained for the year has now disappeared. The Blue Chips Index plunged 274 points today, nearly 2.25%, 12,118. The number for the record, that's almost 100 points lower than the Dow started this year. The Nasdaq carved off 79 points, close to 3%, came to rest at 2747. The S&P 500 tumbled 32 points, almost 2.5%. The final number there, 1278. It was an especially dismal week for stocks. The Dow lost nearly 2.75% since Tuesday. The NASDAQ off more than 3%. The S&P 500 dropped an even 3% for the week. Home builders were among the hardest hit. Pulte Group fell through the floor and plummeted nearly 12%. D.R. Horton shares dropped almost 8.5%. Bond prices kept rising. That pushed the yield on the 10-year T-note to an even deeper historic low of 1.45%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. In Washington, the government releases factory orders for April. Education Secretary Arne Duncan speaks at the first ceremony honoring schools that promote health and sustainability. And across the pond, Queen Elizabeth's Diamond Jubilee continues. Buckingham Palace celebrates her 60-year reign in a concert featuring Sir Tom Jones, Sir Elton John, and Sir Paul McCartney. I'm Gina Delvac.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. You go to pretty much any suburb near you, and it's more likely than not you'll come across a planned community. Whole neighborhoods built from the ground up according to one master plan. They are all over the place, and in the cold, hard light of the housing bust, they're not without a certain irony, too. Today in our series, The Art of Money, what artists and others see when they look at the economy, photographer Amanda Dahlgren and her pictures of the real estate crash in master plan communities in San Diego, California. Amanda, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
How did it work when you started putting together the first of the three big portfolios you've done, the one called Distressed? I mean, did you see these houses and something made you say, I got to have a picture of that, I got to do that?
It started with thinking about what home really means and how we can get so wrapped up in thinking that, you know, the right house in the right neighborhood, you know, will kind of make us who we are or make us better some way.
We do the same thing here, right? We talk about house and home interchangeably, but really it's not.
Yeah. And so this Distress series really was looking at that, you know, we can end up in a place where home is really more of a nightmare. And trying to show that house after house after house that I would find on very public places.
The thing about the pictures in this Distress portfolio that, yeah, you know, it's houses that are upside down, right, on their mortgage,
right,
all that stuff. The pictures are actually upside down.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which I just love.
That visual confusion. There's a lot of kind of intentional visual confusion in the way that the houses are blurred on the edges. And, yeah, you know, that really helps to tell the story of the intensity and all the emotion that's tied up in that, you know, in that phenomenon of it's happening.
I should say, by the way, we've got pictures of these things on our website, and we've got a link to Amanda's website as well. But let me ask you this, though. So as you were going through these distressed properties, there was a theme here, right, that popped out at you, and that was that so many of them were in these master plan communities.
Yeah.
Which gets us to the second portfolio, master plan.
In a lot of cases, the short sales and foreclosures were in the same master plan communities where they were still building. So you had this bizarre juxtaposition of, you know, people really in trouble within blocks of the same company still trying to sell. You know, to me, that there's such a stark difference between what they're selling and the reality, I think, you know, because what you're really going to be delivered is an empty shell, and it's up to you to make a life there. And the life is not going to be what the marketing department, you know, is trying to sell.
You are working on another portfolio, and I don't even know if you want me to ask about this one since it's not up on the website yet, but I find the concept so interesting. The working title, I understand, is Pre-Abandoned.
Such a rich history in photography of people looking at abandoned spaces, you know, houses that have been lived in for years and years and years, and the marks that are made. And my kind of twist on that is looking at the beginning of that life cycle, you know, and especially with these master plan communities, they're sort of built to be disposable. And so the idea of looking at the construction, you know, especially the interiors, that's never been lived in, and it's supposed to be so hopeful and so exciting, but knowing that it's going to be abandoned.
Do you own a house?
I do. It's a nice house, and the schools are not great. So, you know, when I had my daughter 5 years ago, it was, you know, that was a huge concern. In a way, I get that the idea of the master plan community where there's tons of small children and there's parks and there's, you know, new schools and all that kind of stuff is appealing. And I am kind of sucked in, like, you know, for my daughter, especially, like, this would be a pretty good life for her. It's just so false in a way.
Amanda Dahlgren, her photography is on her website. There's a link to it at marketplace.org. Amanda, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
After he finished his speech today up in Minnesota, the one not really about the unemployment report, President Obama still had a full day and night ahead of him, 6 fundraisers for his campaign and state Democratic parties. Next week, he comes back here to Los Angeles for another one, not a fancy dinner at George Clooney's house again. The president is headed this time to a neighborhood called View Park for breakfast. If you've never heard of View Park, it's in South L.A., where it's often referred to as the Black Beverly Hills. From the Marketplace Wealth and Poverty Desk, Shireen Marisol Meraji tells us more.
Everybody's heard about Beverly Hills and Bel Air, but real estate agent Joe Ramsey, a 40-year View Park resident, thinks her neighborhood is just as fabulous. She hops in my car and we tour the hilltop lined with custom homes, many built in the late 30s.
This is the maid's quarters with a 2-car garage.
Ms. Ramsey points to one that takes up a huge lot and has an insane view of downtown L.A. A
lot of doctors and judges and lawyers.
And celebrities have called View Park home.
This was where Debbie Allen lived. That was her house.
Ike and Tina Turner lived in View Park. And I'll drop one more name. The genius Ray Charles. I guess if you say so, I'd have to
pack my things and go. That's right, hit the road, Jack. The story of these wealthy, beautiful Black communities, you know, they're born out of white flight and redlining and, you know, mortgage discrimination and all kind of difficulties.
Angela James is a sociologist who teaches at Loyola Marymount University. She says 60 years ago, African Americans couldn't buy property in View Park and could only live there as servants. But after the 1965 Watts riots, upper middle class whites fled South LA.
So Black lawyers, doctors, entertainers replaced white entertainers and professionals.
Today, View Park is more than 80% African American. The median income is $85,000 a year. That, says James, is rare. Majority African American is usually synonymous with poverty, not wealth.
View Park, where the president will appear, is less than 2 miles from the area of Los Angeles colloquially known as the jungle.
You see, unlike Beverly Hills or Bel Air, View Park is very close to gang-riddled, low-income neighborhoods. And James says that is something middle- and upper-class African-Americans deal with much more often than their white counterparts. Living near poor areas and being the same race creates something she calls linked fate.
They view what's going to happen to me is predicated not just by my tax bracket. What's going to happen to me and my children is inextricably linked to what happens to other people in this racial group. What happens to Black people matters to me.
And Angela James says it matters quite a bit when middle-class African-Americans go to vote.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
A couple of weeks back, View Park neighbors oohed and aahed over fancy landscaping at a garden tour. I couldn't resist chatting with people about President Obama's upcoming visit. I actually broke the news to Carol Thompson and her friend Barbara Windsor.
We heard about him going to George Clooney's house. That's money. This community doesn't have that kind of money.
Although this is a pretty fabulous upscale neighborhood.
But it's not a $100,000 a plague neighborhood. It's not even a $50,000. People have to pay their mortgages here. They can't afford that.
So it would be a pleasure to see Obama here. He goes to Beverly Hills. Let him come down here where the real people live.
$2,500 can buy you a seat at the fundraiser. For $5,000, you'll get a photo with President Obama. Carol Thompson just wants to catch a glimpse of his motorcade rolling through View Park.
Can you imagine what it would do for this community, for the president to come? I was telling all my neighbors, we have to all get out and vote. And not because he's black, but, well, yes, it is because he's black. I'm not going to tell a lie. Yes, it is because he's black. Don't lie. Yes, it's because he's black. I'm black.
But is being black enough for President Obama this time around? For Carol Thompson and every View Park resident I spoke with, it is. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
I'm going to be very disappointed if he cancels and I get all dressed up and get my hair done and tell all my friends to come.
I've got a picture up on the computer here in the studio, part of our wealth and poverty coverage of how you define middle class. It came in today from Zachary Hallcraft in Columbia, Missouri. It's a shot of the house he owns with his wife, white picket fence and all. So do us a favor and send us yours, original pictures that sum up for you what it means to be middle class and why. Go to marketplace.org and click on Middle Class Photo Project.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, which reminds one that Google does indeed want to take over the world. You know how there are all those new top-level domain names out there? .me, for instance, instead of .com, and .xxx for porn sites? Well, Google has done as companies do and applied for a bunch of domains it thinks have commercial value. .google, of course. .youtube, naturally. But also .lol. The official Google blog entry on the topic says the company thinks it has, quote, interesting and creative potential. ROTFLMAO. That's all I have to say. Yeah, no, go ahead. Look it up. All right, we got to go. That's Marketplace from APM on a Friday. Today, the Dow plunged 274 points, nearly 2.25%. The NASDAQ off 79 points, close to 3%. The S&P 500 down 32 points, almost 2.5%. Blame the jobs market, gang. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Sitara Nieves. The executive producer of the broadcast is Deborah Clark. JJ Yore is the vice president and general manager. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, you want to build a business? It's not always a smooth ride, you know.
I often liken it to being the passenger on a windy road. The driver can anticipate the curves and account for them with his or her body, but the passenger is the one usually who gets nauseous.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourselves a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.